is a book of poetry like they've been trained to believe it is by the theologians of the church realm. And so when they read it, they try to attach it to some other physical, natural letter of the word that they have been taught. Does that make sense to you? Do you understand what I'm saying? They're not looking at the spirit of this book and what God is trying to show you and to reveal to you in your life. This book of Ecclesiastes is no different from any other book of this Bible. It is meant to enlighten you of your identity and let you know that God does love you and that God is in control and that all your works are worthless. I mean, it's basically what God's telling us through the whole book, isn't it? That you can't do it. He had to do it. He gave humanity all this time to do everything, and all they did was screwed everything up. So he said, okay, now that I've given you the opportunity to show yourself that you can't do it, now I'm going to send my son, who is going to do it. He is capable of doing it. I'm going to reveal his identity in him first as a pattern to show you the things that must be done, and then it's going to be revealed in you too. And you don't even have a choice in that. That ought to make you so happy that you don't even have a choice in it. God's going to do it. And he didn't say, I might do it. He said, I'm going to do it. See? If we get out of this thing thinking, like I said a while ago, that if you think you've got a choice, you're going to think out of the natural realm. You'll never be led by the Spirit as long as you think you have a choice. This is about knowing that God is in control. Not just saying words, oh, God's in control, like everybody wants to say. Because, see, that's what the New Age do. They do say that. They just say, oh, God's in control. It don't make any difference. See? They don't need the book. But you know the greatest thing that the New Age people leave out? I mean, they'll even talk a little bit about the Word. But you know what they leave out? They leave out the cross. They leave out the cross. No crucifixion. See? They don't need no crucifixion. See, they already think they... Huh? Oh, yeah, there's no crucifixion for them people, see? It's all the good stuff, see? Well, you can't have a positive without a negative, can you? If you do, it's not going to function. A positive and negative creates movement, life, and power, doesn't it? You can't have it any other way. But everybody wants the good stuff, the positive, but they don't want the negative. And I'm going to tell you right now, if it wasn't for the negative, it's been in my life, and I heard it taught this way years ago, that you always should have the same amount of positive input in your life as you do negative. Okay? Does that make sense? It sounds good, but it ain't the truth. The truth is, show me in Jesus' life when he walked, how much positive did you see being done to him in his life? Only from the Father. In the flesh realm, was there any positive to this? When Paul walked as an apostle, how much positive was in his life when he began to serve God? I think we just talked about a while ago about him getting his head crushed twice, you know, and being stoned and being whipped with a cat of nine tails so many times and thrown into the sea and perils of beasts and all this and people and all this stuff, you know. Does it sound like a lot of positive there? Sounds like a lot of negative, don't it? Okay? I've found out that my life, and I've said it for years, 80% of my life is negative, at least. Maybe more, I don't know. I'm not keeping exact figures in this thing. But I'm telling you, if the negative don't outweigh the positive, you're not going anywhere. Huh? The negative is what teaches you. It builds character in your life. And Solomon was a man who experienced all of it, wasn't he? So know this, there's a lot of good things in this book. But we got to look at them by the Spirit. We got to close off that natural Ishmael thinking and turn to Isaac, the spiritual things. Okay? We got to go into the Spirit, led by the lead of the Spirit and not by the need of the flesh. Right? Always ministered from the lead, not the need. Okay, we're chapter 2, verse 1. I said in my heart, go to now, I will prove you with myrrh. Therefore, enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. And I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what does it? I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly till I might see what was the good for the sons of men. What was that good for the Son of Man? Which they should do under the sun, under the heaven, all the days of their life. I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that brings forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and I had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in the Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold, and the peculiar treasures of kings and of the princes, provinces. I got me singers and women singers, and the lights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do. And behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. And I turned myself to see, to behold wisdom, and madness and folly, for what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which has been already done? Then I saw that wisdom excelled folly, as far as light excels darkness. And the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happened to them all. Then I said in my heart, as it happened to the fool, so it happened even to me. And why was I then more wise? This I said in my heart, that this also is vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than the fool forever, seeing that which now is, in the days to come shall be all be forgotten, and how dies the wise man? As the fool. Therefore I hated life, because the work that I wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Yea, I hated my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that should be after me, shall be after me, and who knoweth whether he shall be wise man or a fool. Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity. Yet to a man that has not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what hath man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart, wherein he has labored under the sun? For all the days are sorrows, and his travail grief, yea, his heart takes not rest in the night. This is also vanity. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw that it was from the hand of God. For who can eat, or who else can hasten thereunto, more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner he gives travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and a vexation of the spirit. May God open our eyes to see the depth of His Spirit in this chapter. Back to the first verse again. If we ended up chapter 1 with that 18th verse, and it says what? For in much wisdom, or abundant wisdom, is abundant grief. And in that word grief, we have the meaning of anger, provocation, frustration, sorrow, and indignation. Those are the things that come out of much knowledge. Because when you have the knowledge, who is going to recognize it? Who's going to recognize the knowledge that you have? Only God. Doesn't it say in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 2, that the natural man receives not the things of the Spirit because they are spiritually discerned? See? Only the spiritual person is going to discern that you have the true wisdom of God. The natural man can't tell what you got. They have no clue. They're in confusion. Okay? So know that when you increase in the wisdom of God, you're going to increase in anger, provocation, frustration, sorrow, indignation, and grief. Now, isn't that a great thing to look forward to? Huh? Isn't that a good thing to look forward to? The more you know, the more grief and the suffering that you're going to go through. So if you don't want to go through any suffering and grief, pack up and go now. Because I'm going to tell you things. See? There's a lot of grief that's going to come from the things that you learn about God. Because the natural man is always going to war against the Spirit, isn't it? Okay. Now we'll hit chapter 2. And I said in my heart, go to now. Literally he's saying, come on now. I will prove or I will test you with what? Mirth. What is mirth? Pleasure. It's pleasure. He said, I'm going to test you with pleasure. Why would he do that? Come on, everybody says if you test somebody, you test them with hard things. He said, no, I'm going to test you with pleasure. What did Solomon get tested with? He was the wisest, richest man on the face of the earth. On the face of the earth. So what do you think he wanted for? Nothing. God gave him every pleasure and every desire that the heart could understand and desire. Right? And you know what? It didn't do him any good, did it? If you listen to the wisest man that ever walked on the earth, you have to understand, he said, it's all vanity. It's all. What does the word vanity mean again? Temporal. Transitory and unfulfilling. That means it's temporary, it's unfulfilling, it can never fulfill you, and it's just something that's here today and gone tomorrow. All the wealth of this world, that's what it is. It's vanity. It's nothing. So he's going to test him with the pleasures of this world. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. So he says, literally the word therefore is, so go ahead and look at the pleasure. Go ahead and see it. Because if you don't see it, how will you know? How will you know you love God if you never get the opportunity to choose between the two? You got to experience it. See? And if the pleasures of the world are the things you want, God's going to give them to you. He said, I'll give you the desires of your heart. But if you truly want to serve God, you've got to have both of them to look at. You've got to see God and you've got to have the world. You've got to have that in front of your face and see which one you're going to. You hear what I'm saying? You got to see it both. He saw the whole picture. Solomon got a view that very few people got to see. But today, guess what? You have the same view. You have the same view as Solomon. And behold, he said, after he saw all this pleasure, he said what? Behold, this also is transitory and unfulfilling. See? He had everything his heart could desire, but yet he was not fulfilled, was he? And in the 12th chapter, he's going to give you an answer. We've got a few chapters to go before we get there. He's going to tell you what the true pleasure and fulfilling of our life is. Something that's permanent. It's not transitory. He's going to tell you what this is, but we're not going to get there today. I won't tell you. You have to wait for the rest of the story later. Okay? Unless you want to cheat and go read the last chapter. You can do that if you want to. Okay. I said of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, or mirth, it should be pleasure, what does it accomplish? When it says, what does it, literally in the language it says, what does it accomplish? What does it accomplish? What does pleasure accomplish? We need to know. There you go. We got to know that pleasure does one thing. It satisfies the flesh. It makes you comfortable. And don't you know that somebody who is very wealthy, who can have anything their heart desires, can purchase it and never even think about cost of anything, can't spend all their money, you know what? They're going to get comfortable. Why do you think in the Feast of Tabernacles you no longer walk in wealth and prosperity in the natural stuff? You walk through Passover and Pentecost, there's where the stuff is. But in Tabernacles, you'd have to learn to walk by faith. And it's not by your faith, but it's by whose faith? It's His faith. See? The just shall live by His faith, Habakkuk 2:4. That was a prophetic word saying that if you're walking in the kingdom of God, you'll walk by His faith and not by your faith. It's not about you. It's about Him and His faith. Okay? He said, I sought in my heart to acquaint myself, or literally his flesh, to wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom. That sounds like a contradictory statement, doesn't it? I sought in my heart to find the wisdom, but to guide my heart with wisdom while I'm drinking wine. See? You know, there's people today that believe the same thing. I talked with a gentleman yesterday. He believes sitting around smoking pot is real spiritual, getting hooked up with God. I get real spiritual, man. I get hooked up with these people smoking pot. And he said, man, I mean, they're all giving people. They all give me of their pot and everything. We get together and share. And said, man, that's godly. There's a man who's tried to mix it with wisdom, see, and it don't work. Oil and water don't mix, does it? Okay. Oh, there's some fruitcakes out here. Some people thinking some real crazy things, see. And everyone who can say something foolish like that is because they do not know the Word of God. I'm not talking about the letter of the Word. I'm talking about knowing the Spirit of the Word. This book says, by Paul's own lips, he spoke and said this. He said that all things are profitable unto me. Right? All things are lawful unto me. But what is profitable to me? See, not everything's profitable. If I go doing them things, would it profit me any? I could do them, and God's not going to beat me up or kill me over them. See, the law of reaping and sowing is in effect now, isn't it? If I touch a red-hot stove, my hand is going to do what? It's going to get burned. Did God punish me? Hello? No, God didn't punish me. I did it. Today, we are in control of the things we're doing. We have to accept responsibility. And this is what Solomon's telling you about. All these things we do is nothing. But yet we're responsible for what we do. He said, God has not mocked man. We'll reap what he sows. If he sows to the flesh, he'll reap corruption. There's your hand on the hot stove. But if I sow to the Spirit, I will reap the life of the ages. There's the spiritual side of it. See, I can get the positive or I can get the negative. And I'm the one that's making it. I don't blame God and I don't blame demons and devils for my problems. My problems come from my brain right here. See, right here. Okay? Where am I at here? Oh. Yet while acquainting my heart with wisdom and to lay hold on what? Or foolishness until I might see what that good was for the sons of Adam, which they should do under heaven all the days of their life. So he said, I'm trying to hold on to this. I'm trying to hold on to wisdom, right? And lay hold on foolishness. He said, I got wisdom and I got foolishness. I'm going to hold on to both of them until I find out what's the good in it. Does that sound like a man that's kind of crossed his wires here a little bit? See? He's telling you what you do. He said, look, I know there's something else. My personal desires have to be dealt with, don't they? They have to be dealt with. Okay? So I've got this personal desire, and when I got this personal desire going around out here, I've got wisdom somewhere else. And I don't want to give up my foolishness until I've got a hold of this. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like what we do? We try to hold on to the world until we get a hold of God, and then we don't want to let loose of either one of them. Isn't that what we do? See, something's got to be laid aside. There can be no more of duality. See, we've got to come to a place where we know only God. Forget it. Drop it. If it's not of God, what should we do with it? Let it go. And when we let it go, it'll be fine. You'll be walking in faith then. Won't be up to you any longer. He said, look here in verse 4. He said, I made me great works and I built me a house. I planted me a great vineyard, or literally he built it, and he said, I made me gardens and orchards, or literally parks. And I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. He had everything he wanted. He had all kinds of fruits around him. You'll get that later. All kinds of fruits, I'm saying. I made me pools of water to water therewith the forest that brings forth the trees. He said, I purchased me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house and had great possessions of great small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I did it, didn't he? Ego of man does all this. See, man has a lot of strength in himself. The natural man is a very strong beast. We'll get into this later on. It'll show you where we're the beast in next chapter. But he said, I will do all these things. Does it sound like the I in Isaiah 14? I will, I will, I will, I will, six different times. He says, I will be like God. I'll sit in the sides of the north. I'll ascend to the mountain. You know, I'll be like the Most High. I don't make it there, believe me. I never ascend to the mountain. It's only we's going to get on the mountain. Okay? But notice he said, I got me, literally the word God has purchased. I purchased me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. See, I can see a type of Christ in this. He purchased who? He purchased us. And he said he was above all that were in Jerusalem before me. He said, I gathered me silver and gold. What is that? Redemption in the nature of God. And the peculiar or the valuable treasure of kings and of the provinces. And he said he got men singers and women singers and delights or literally luxuries of the sons of Adam as musical instruments. Now, this word musical instruments does not make sense. Okay? Because that word literally means concubines. It does not mean musical instruments. I don't know how in the world they got that. But the word means concubines. Wives or a harem of women, you know. And all that of all sorts. And Solomon did something very surely. He said he got women or concubines of all sorts. And remember, we've spoke of it before. How many women did he have? He ain't got that right. Two would have been too many. See? But he had 700 wives and 300 concubines, or the other way, whichever way it was, 300 and 700. But he had 1,000 women.
I think he had pain.
If he only had one pain, he'd have been blessed. He had about 999 pains when he got past the first one. Okay? But what I'm saying here is he had many wives of all sorts, and he disobeyed God in that. And God said, you only need one, but they should be of your own kind. That's not talking about race. It's only talking about believers versus unbelievers. And he married many pagan women who were worshipers of false gods, and what did they do to him? They led him astray, and he began to be a pagan worshiper just like them. God is trying to tell you that everything that those women, which represent your soulish side, all you're doing is letting those soulish physical things become idols to you that you worship. Do you understand? In his life there was 1,000. In our life we might have 10,000. Okay? But anything in our life that becomes between God and us is one of those concubines. And they're pagan. And we will worship them until we see the reality of God in our lives. See, instead of dealing with the man in our life, we're dealing with our what? Our woman, our soul.
What do you say the silver and gold
represent? Silver represents redemption. Gold represents the nature of God. Okay? Verse 9. So I was great. Ooh, there's me go. And increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Now, he wasn't lying here. He wasn't lying. But what wisdom was he talking about? He said, my wisdom. His natural wisdom was there. Wasn't the wisdom of God, was there? And whatsoever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any pleasure. The word joy should be pleasure. Because my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Now notice, whatever he wanted, he had. Does that sound like a feel good to you? If it feels good, do it. Huh? But whose inheritance is this? Whose inheritance is this? Huh?
Solomon.
But Solomon the flesh man or Solomon the spirit? The flesh man. See, the flesh man can have anything he wants if that's what you want. But that is your reward. Are you going to be satisfied with the things of this world? I'm not. I'm sorry. They have no draw on me. They're all, what did I say, transitory and unfulfilling. You can have all the things of the world. You can buy the best vehicles, live in the fanciest home, and you know what? If your house burns, it's just like that trailer it burned next door. It's burned. It's gone, isn't it? It don't make any difference how fancy your house is. It can go down in a flash. See, nothing is lasting and fulfilling except God in your life. That's it. And if you don't figure that out, then everything in the process is going to be vanity in your life. And when you come to the end, you're going to say, but, and there's nothing there. Nothing will be there. It's got to understand that God in your life is what it's all about. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was what? Vanity. And again, it means transitory and unsatisfactory or unfulfilling. And a vexation of spirit. The word vexation means striving or grasping after the spirit. See, it's not your works, is it? Ephesians 2, 8, 9 says, you're saved by grace. This is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. Right? So this vexation of spirit is a grasping after the spirit. I can't reach after God. You realize that? You can't reach after God. He reaches out to you. It's not your choice. It's up to Him. If God gets a hold of you, you'll never get away. Jesus said this about in John. He said, "All John 10, I believe it was, he said, all that you gave me, I have lost none. Huh? Except Judas. But he picked him up later. So, see, whatever's put in his hand, how can he lose them? Jesus had all the first fruit put in his hand. Do you hear me? Do you think any of them get away? Do you think you can slip, slide? Somebody said something to me here this past week. They said, some people called me on the phone from a distance somewhere else. Said, I feel like I was backsliding. Guess what? How can you backslide? You know that word's not even in the Bible? Oh, it's in there in the English language, but it's not in there in the language. The word backsliding is something someone else made up because it's not in that book. Backsliding, huh?
The word man.
It's a word man translated from another Hebrew word and started calling it backsliding. I think it says apostasy. See? I understand apostatize. I've lost my zeal and I'm not following after God. I understand that word, but backsliding's not there. And see, when we use those languages, I know something. If you're in the kingdom of God, what language should you speak? The kingdom language, kingdom of God. See, I should be speaking His language. And if I'm speaking all this religious, man-made terminology, what kingdom am I walking in?
Ego kingdom.
I'm in the ego kingdom of man. See, it's man's own language, and they've tried to make it religious and make it look like they know something. Like this word that I spoke about when we was down in Texas, I was talking with Daniel this morning. This big word, paradigm. Paradigm shift. I've heard people speak about it for years, about this paradigm shift and a shift in consciousness. But it's just a word. And all it's talking about is understanding in here that this shift is no longer between God out there and us here, but it's God in man. There's the shift. But see, they throw that word and make it real spiritual by using this Greek word, which they don't even understand. But they learned how to pronounce a Greek word. Paradigm. Oh, my goodness. Spiritual. Don't it make your hair stand up? Give you goosebumps? Makes me sick. Okay? We got to know that all this stuff is a vexation of spirit. The striving or grasping after the spirit. And there was no profit where? Now, what is under the sun? What are we standing on? It's talking about everything in the worldly realm. It's not just talking about something under the sun. This earth, this worldly system is under the sun, isn't it? Everything in this worldly system, what good is it? What's he saying? What profit is it? Nothing. It's only temporary. See, we put value on homes and possessions and all this stuff. And see, if we trust it, it can look like that pile of rubble right next door right now that burned down. The song we used to sing, some men trust in horses, some men trust in chariots, but we'll trust in the name of our God. See, we'll trust in His nature and His character. I'm not trusting in the strength of horses or human flesh. I'm not trusting in the works that they have fashioned by their hands. Because they're not going to be there in the end, are they? They will not be there. They can do nothing for you. But if our trust is in that, we're going to be sadly disappointed somewhere down the road. He said, I turned myself, verse 12, to see wisdom and madness and folly. Because what can Adam do that comes after the king? Even that which hath already been done. He said, what can the man do that comes after the king? That tells me something. I know who the king is. Does anybody know who the king is? It's Christ. Well, after he comes, what can Adam do? You know why Adam can't do nothing? Because he don't exist any longer. Jesus, the king who came, was the last Adam. How can Adam do anything if he don't exist anymore? He only exists in our thinking process that makes us think, oh, he's bad. He's one of them blow-up dolls that look big and bad. Poke a hole in him, what's in there? Nothing. Just goes to the floor. It's only in our thinking process. And today I want to stick a pin in your imagination of Adam so it can, and he can go to the ground. Just flop over. That's what you need done to your thinking process. You need it pricked open so you can let all that out of there. And he says, what can Adam do that comes after the king? Even that or that which has already been done. You can't do nothing that hadn't already been done, can you? Didn't he say on the cross, it is finished? Then what can you do? What can you add to the finished product? See? But still, man says, well, but. Don't they? God says it's finished. Man says, but. They want to add to it. It's all hay, wood, and stubble. If it's gold, silver, or precious stones, it'll still be thrown in the fire. But they'll come through. Okay? Then I saw the wisdom that wisdom excelled folly or foolishness as far as light excelled darkness. He saw something. Good and evil. He saw them and he says, yes, good excels evil. But you know what? He already said all is what? That's still eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, isn't it? Look what he says in verse 14. The wise man or the intelligent man's eyes are in his head. What's he talking about? His vision is in his mind. Do you understand that? His vision, his eyes, is in his head. It's in his mind. His mind is enlightened. Okay? But the fool, and that word fool means stupid, simple, a simpleton or an arrogant person walks in what? Darkness or literally ignorance, death, and wickedness. And I myself perceived, or literally the word perceived is know, it's yada. So he said, I knew also that one event or one fate happened to them all. Watch this. One happened to them all. See, rich people think they're better than somebody else. Ain't going to be. Never be. Look what he says. Then said I in my heart, as it happened to the fool or the stupid simpleton that was arrogant, so it happened also to me. Everything that the poor man or the stupid man or the foolish man or the arrogant man experienced, the wise man experienced the same thing. When is the church world going to wake up and quit preaching this, you're setting in a little safety net and you'll never be touched? Just come and say, I'm sorry, and you'll never experience anything bad again. All that brings to you is condemnation and guilt because you can't live a perfected life in protection like that. It don't happen, does it? Once you start serving God, then the test begins. And you're going to have the same test out there. Didn't Paul say the sun shines on the good and the evil? The rain falls on the just and the unjust? See, everybody's got to experience it all. If God put us in a little cocoon and protected us in our walk, guess what? Yeah, there's people that God protects for a reason. He's got something to do. Just like Paul, when they crushed his head twice, he resurrected him because he needed him. That was his choice. Okay? Wasn't my choice. Wasn't anybody else's choice. It was God's choice. But we have to know that all of us have to experience the same thing, because if I could walk in and say, oh, Jesus, forgive me, and then I live in a shelter the rest of my life, nobody can touch me, don't you think that everybody in that world would do the same thing? If it was that simple, don't you believe everybody would do it? Not that simple, is it? We all have to experience the positive and the negative. It's not that simple to just say a few words and think I'm protected for life. No, it's God's choice. Okay? Then I said in my heart, as it happened to the fool, the stupid, simple, arrogant one, so happened even to me. And why was I then more wise? Do you hear this? You hear doubt in his voice? Well, why was I wise if it didn't make any difference? It didn't help me from going through any of these things, these tests and trials. Do you hear what I'm saying? It did not help him with his tests and trials, did it? Right? Is it going to help you with your tests and trials? It will help you with them, but it won't get you out of them. God's wisdom will help you get through these tests and trials. Jesus didn't say, Lord, take them out of the world. He said, protect them in the world. Protect them in the world. See? He don't want you to take everything away from you, the negative. That's what's going to make you grow. So he says then, I said in my heart, this also is what? Vanity. Transitory and unsatisfactory or unfulfilling. Guess what? Every test I go through is still going to fall to the wayside. Everything it does to my flesh, guess what? It's going to pass. The dust returns to what? To the dust. Does it make any difference then? Because the reality of the thing is, I am already perfected in my spirit and so are you. We're dealing with flesh right now. We're dealing with our thinking process in the flesh. My spirit and your spirit is as perfect as it can ever be. If my spirit is the spirit of God, then how could anything be wrong with it? Hello, can anybody give me an answer for that? It can't be anything wrong with it. And there is only one spirit in this earth, and it's the spirit of God. All the rest of them things we conjure up in our heads. Them demons and devils that everybody wants to play with. Go ahead and play patty cake with them if you want to. I ain't got time to waste on them. If they get in my face, I just put them away like Jesus did. Take a hike. Okay? Verse 16. Because there is no remembrance of the wise more than the stupid simpleton that was an arrogant person. Forever. There's no remembrance of this. Seeing that which is now is, in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the what? As the fool, the stupid simpleton, the arrogant one. They're all going to die the same, aren't they? Our breath leaves us. We're dead. Rich people die of cancer just like poor people, don't they? Doesn't make any difference. death doesn't, isn't, what would we say, isn't prejudiced. It takes all, doesn't it? Therefore, I hated life. You hear this? This is a man that's thinking. Maybe some of the thinking processes he's doing is he's showing you is some of the carnal ways that we do think. He hated life. You know what I heard a little girl, Lois could tell you the same thing. She heard the little girl next door when the trailer burned and we got home Friday evening right after the trailer and the house burnt down. You know what the little girl said? She's 4 years old, I think. 4 years old. She said, I wish God didn't even make people. 4 years old. She's mad at God. And Lois talked to her and consoled her about it and said, it's okay. If God didn't make people, you wouldn't be here. It's okay. These things happen, but God still loves you. Your daddy and mommy wasn't hurt in the fire, and you wasn't hurt in the fire, and your pets, you got your pets out. They were okay. They were outside, so, you know, that's everything's fine. Just lost the house. But what did you think come out of a little girl's heart 4 years old? It's in everybody's heart the same way. She just expressed it. Therefore, I hated life because the work that is wrought under the sun is what? Literally unpleasant to me. Anybody like to go out and work in the hot sun and sweat? And it's easier to sit in the air conditioning, isn't it? And go through nothing. All the struggles of life, it's easier not to go through them, but it's not going to change you. But he said everything here he hated. He said, the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous or unpleasant to me, and because all is what? Transitory and unsatisfactory, and it's a striving or grasping after the Spirit. See? It's work. I'm trying to make God like me. I can't make my Father like me. He already loves me. And if you understand that, you don't have to labor anymore. Hello? Did you hear me? My Father loves me, and your Father loves you. I'm not talking about flesh. I'm talking about who you are, your spirit. If my Father is my Father and He is love, what does He do? He loves me. I don't have to labor for that. Do you hear me? You don't have to have any rules and regulations or formulas. You don't have to be dunked three times or splashed or spit on or anything else. God loves you. Just as you are. If He wants you to change, guess what He'll do? He'll change you. But the best I can figure, God never made a mistake. Can you agree with that? If God never made a mistake, then what am I worried about? He made me the way I am for a purpose. Huh?
God doesn't make junk.
He don't make junk. He made you the way He wanted you. And so what if He chooses to use me as a negative in something? Was it my choice to start with?
No.
Did I say, oh, no, God, you can't use me. I'm a good guy. You're going to use me on the good side. I'm going to be on the side with the sheep. You can't put me over at the goats. Well, you know what? If He wants to put you over, He can make you a goat. He can do anything He wants to do. And usually He don't have to work too hard making some of us goats, does He? We can get some butts in there all we want, can't we? Okay. Verse 18. He said, yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the Adam man that shall be after me. And who knows whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is unsatisfying, unfulfilling. It's temporary. It's transitory. You know what he's saying? He's regretting he'd done all the things he did and accomplished. Because I have no control over what's going to come after me. That sounds like people, don't it? There's people that have wealth and they go to the grave and they're so upset they can't take it with them. They want to take it with them. We don't own anything. We only have temporary possession of the very best. God is permitting us to use some things. He's blessed us to have something. We don't own anything. If I die today, if me and my wife die today, this property's not ours. If it was, we could pack it up and take it with us. It's not ours. It's just something temporary God uses to let us perform something he wants done. Do you understand that? Nothing belongs to me. Nothing belongs to you in spirit. Flesh, you're going to lay attachments to everything. See? It's not ours. It's just passing through. And he said, every bit of it's vanity, right? He said, verse 20, therefore I went about, or continually went about, and caused my heart to despair because of all the labor which I took under the sun. Look what he did. He said, I thought about this so much, my heart was in despair constantly. You know how many people worry about possessions? They're consumed with them. This is mine. Don't you touch it. It's mine. I know people that sell things and then get mad because the people do something with what they bought. You know, they buy a possession from somebody and they say, well, I labored and worked hard to fix that the way it was, and look at that, they messed it up. They just done what they wanted to with it. What?
Broke the window.
All right. Well, if it's a broken window, whatever. See, hear what he's doing? He's telling you, that's the way of the natural man. What difference does it make? Seriously, what difference does it make? See, if I had something, I know this particular person, he would sell things all the time. And he would sell them and he'd tie a string to them when he sold to everybody. He'd give them to you and tie a string to it. You can have this, but I can come and get it anytime I want it, right? Well, whose is it? You just storing it at my place then? See? Sell it to you. It's yours. But anytime I want to use it, I'll come get it. What is that? That isn't sold to me, is it? We've got to come past this thing of understanding that this stuff doesn't mean anything. He said, all it's going to do is grieve my heart. See, he went about and continually caused his heart to be in what? Despair. Because of the labor which I took under the sun. Because it ain't going to do anything for me. It's temporal. It's unsatisfying. It'll only make me feel good for a season. And you know how short that season is? It could be gone, just like all those homes right next door to us that burned down Friday. See? Boom. They went to town, and they just went to Portsmouth and back, 5 miles, 10-mile round trip. They come back, they ain't got no house. That's how quick it was gone. A matter of minutes. They weren't gone. The boy that lived right next door to us said he wasn't gone 20 minutes. And he come back and he's lost every possession he had. See? Now, what kind of stock can I lay in stuff that can go that quick? You better not lay no stock in any of it. You just thank God for what you got and enjoy it, because he said the best thing at your allotment is to enjoy the fruits of your labor. Enjoy it. Go ahead. Enjoy it. It's okay. Don't make it an idol, because it might end up like that. Where am I at? Okay. Because there is a man whose labor is in wisdom. See, there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity. The word equity is literally success. Yet to a man that has not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This is also transitory and unsatisfying and unfulfilling and the great evil. We're hearing a man talk out of his heart now. He's upset. He's in despair because somebody, even the man with wisdom, says, what I've got is going to end up somebody else. I don't care what they do with this place when I'm gone. They can make it a crack house. What's it to me? When I'm done with it, what difference does it make? This building is nothing but a passing possession. It's what God done in my heart and your heart that's the only thing that'll last. Do you understand that? It's the only thing that counts. Everything else is passing on. For what has Adam of all his labor and all of the vexation, that word there should be desire, and all of his desire of his heart, wherein he has labored under the sun? What have you got? What are you taking with you? See? You come in naked, and naked you shall leave. Right? You ain't carrying anything out of here with you. If you're naked, you ain't got no pockets to hide nothing, have you? You ain't carrying nothing out of here. Oh, my. Verse 23. Because all his days are what? Literally afflicted. Sorrows. All of his days. You get a day when you haven't got any affliction or sorrow, you ought to be on your knees thanking God. Because he said every day on this earth is affliction. Some way or another you're going to have some. You get a little spare time, a little loose time, you got to thank God for it. You got to thank God for giving me a break. Give me a little bit of Elam once in a while. A little place where I can rest and get out from under all the pressures. Because every day of your life is a testing, and it says so right there. Every day is a testing. Here's the wealthiest, wisest man in the world. Did he get out of any of it? Did you think you're going to? You better know it's coming. All of his days are afflicted, and his travail, the word travail literally, his task or his job is in grief. Yes, his heart takes not rest in the night. This is also vanity. See, when you get thinking about all these possessions and all this stuff, you can't sleep at night. Things happen, and you can't sleep, see. If I come to the perfect rest of God, what can keep me awake? I'm using myself for an example. I was in turmoil most of my life, and I lied to myself, and I lied to everybody else, but I lied to myself more than anybody. I'm not afraid of nothing, you know, I don't worry about this or that. And you know what? I was scared to death inside. And then one day God got a hold of me, and he showed me what I really was. I was a coward. But you know what? I don't care what they do now, because I believe what he said. They can't touch me. They can't lay a hand on me without his permission. And I've had people stick guns in my face and threaten to kill me over this gospel. And you know what? I'm not dead and they are. Something tells me maybe I heard the truth, huh? I've had people stand at my bedroom window and shoot guns off trying to keep me off at night, and I went to sleep and forgot about it. I don't have time to fool with the foolishness of this world. I've got something to do. I went to sleep. I don't care about this stuff. And that's what you have to come to your life. It doesn't make any difference. If I lay down in my bed tonight and I am concerned about somebody damaging my property or stealing my vehicle parked outside the window right there, and I don't sleep all night, if somebody wanted it, could I stop it?
No.
If they want it, they're going to get it. What do I pay insurance for? If somebody takes it, they just give me another one. You know, they run them down the assembly line every day. What do I care what they do with it? It's just a possession, and it's temporal. I won't have that. In fact, if what somebody told me was the truth, I'd have another one next week. Someone told me they were selling them things for $27,000 down in Cincinnati. I'd have to go look at that. Buy a new one cheaper than one I got and save money. So, anyway, it's just a possession. We've got to come to that thinking process. It's just a possession. You can't take it with you, and me worrying about it and being in despair about it will not change anything except that I don't get rest and then my body gets all out of whack and I can't function right and I get sick and all them problems come. Okay? Verse 24. Here's the beauty one. Here. There is nothing better for Adam, that's the natural man, than that he should eat and drink and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor or in his toil. Right? This also I saw that it was from the hand of God. Wasn't some devil doing it, was it? It's all. He said, enjoy what you got. If you make a good living, enjoy it. But don't let your living and your possessions get between you and God. Just let it be. God has got you where he wants you. There's no reason. Find out why you're there. Find out why you have wealth. Is it to heap it up for yourself or to do what God wants done? See, just find out what it's for. And you know where you're going to find out where it's for? You know who's going to tell you? God is. See, nobody's going to tell you. God's going to tell you what it's for. You find out what it is. Verse 25, because who can eat or who else can hasten, or literally that should be enjoy, more than I? Who can enjoy more than he did? The richest, wealthiest, wisest man in the world. Who can enjoy more than him or eat more than him? Now, Daniel might give him a run on the eating side. Right? But see, who can enjoy it more than him? I mean, when I eat food, some people used to come here, Larry and Lori Smith, and Larry was a person I believe enjoyed food more than anybody I ever met in my life. When he'd take a bite of food, he'd say, "Oh, God, man." I mean, he enjoyed his food. And that's what we should do. It doesn't mean to excess, but when you eat it, whatever you eat, you should enjoy it because it's a gift of God. And I never met anybody in my life other than Larry that enjoyed food more than he did. I never did. I mean, flavor. He would do anything to enhance the flavor of his food. And that's the way we're supposed to. But we should enhance our lives the same way also. And say, "Wow, this is another day God's given me." Not say, "Oh, it's a Monday and I gotta trudge through another week. But God, He gave me another day. What am I going to do? Lord, what do you want done? This is good. I've got another day." See, that's the way we're supposed to look at life. Enhance it the same way we eat our food. I'm gonna get lit here in a minute. Verse 26. Because God gives to Adam that which is good in his sight. And then he tells you what it is. Wisdom, knowledge, and joy. My. I won't even go there. I'll let your mind work on this one. The word God there is Elohim. I'll let your mind work on that. You find out yourself. But look what he said. God gives to the man that is good in his sight, to the ones God sees as godly, what's he going to give to you? Wisdom, knowledge, and joy. But now look what he did to the other one. But to the man, to the sinner or the sinful person, he gives what? He gives travail. Literally, he gives them a task or a job. And look what his job is. To gather and to heap up that he may give to him that is good before God. So them sinful people want to go to work? Get out of the way and let them go. Let them pull out in front of you. Let them step in line in front of you and get their meal and go first. So they can hurry and get back to work for you. See? Who do they work for? You. Let them have it. Don't be in a hurry. My favorite verse is, be anxious for nothing. Let them have it. And look what he said. This is also vanity. It's transitory. It's unsatisfactory. And it's this grasping and striving after the Spirit. See? You know what? Because all this really don't matter. And even if God gives the sinful people the task of heaping up to give to the righteous, it's still going to pass away. Because when God is all in all, there will be no difference. Do you hear me? How can there be a difference if God is all in all, Mike? How can there be someone who is, you know, the saints and the ain'ts? There can't be. We're just going to be what? God's Feast of Tabernacles takes us back to the Feast of Oneness. Isn't that what God's plan is? That His uniting of God and man together in oneness? Huh? Jesus' cry was, "Father, make them one with me as I am one with you." Guess what? Isn't going to be all that stuff. So even this is going to pass away. That's only for this age. And to see how you handle what God gives you. What kind of an attitude have you got in all this? You hear me? No matter what it takes, He's going to check you out. Oh, Lord, I'm almost lit. I'm going to turn...